Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of Nature Now at kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest for this week is Casey McLean, founder, executive director, and veterinary nurse of SR3. SR3 is an organization working to protect the health and welfare of marine wildlife in the Pacific Northwest. The three R's in the name represent response, rehabilitation, and research. And I was really fortunate earlier this year to be able to visit their facility in Des Moines, that's north of Tacoma and just south of Seattle, with the staff and some of the volunteers from the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. But before our conversation with Casey McLean, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Well, actually, it's two sounds. They're very different from each other, and they're made by two different species of marine mammals. So the question is, do you know which is which? And a hint, both species are mentioned in today's program. So now let's talk with Casey.
So Casey, I am thrilled to have you here. And listeners may know, I think I probably mentioned that I was fortunate enough to come down with some of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center crew and have a tour of SR3. And you are the director. So first, of course, SR3.
It's a mouthful.
Yes. Well, I'm sure it's a shorthand for something.
It is. It's sea life response, rehabilitation, and research.
Response, rehabilitation, and research. Okay, that sort of covers the scope then of what you do.
Absolutely.
And your focus is on what kind of sea life?
All marine mammals and sea turtles. So anything from a tiny harbor seal pup all the way up to several thousand pound sea lions, sea turtles, as I mentioned, small porpoise could potentially come in as needed, all your different seals and sea lion species.
That's a huge range.
We wanted to be prepared for any species that may need help in the Pacific Northwest that's a marine mammal, because we're the first and the only of this kind that just focuses on marine mammals.
Which is also really fascinating to me, and I'll ask you about that a little bit later. But for listeners, what do you think is the most important thing you want people to understand about what you do and why you do it?
I think the fact that this is science-based. A little bit different maybe from, say, like your humane societies that are rescuing cats and dogs, because we care about cats and dogs, and they're big parts of our lives. We do care about marine mammals, obviously, and they are a very big part of how we live in the, Salish Sea. But this is really about science, because the numbers of animals we can bring in is more limited. When you talk about baby birds and bunnies and squirrels, they're all quite small. These animals are larger.
And they require very specific kinds of environment and circumstances.
Yes. So we're not going to be bringing in thousands of them. So the numbers that we do bring in, we really want to understand what is impacting them and how do we mitigate that out in the wild. How are humans impacting these animals and what changes can we make in our day-to-day lives to not make those impacts so drastic to them?
In a way, that's sort of hopefully putting yourselves out of work.
Ideally, we would love if there's never another marine mammal that needs help.
That needs help. But so, and I guess then maybe the next question is, amongst the variety of things that can happen to animals in the wild, it sort of sounds like maybe humans are one of the biggest factors in marine mammal health issues.
I would venture to say humans are the factor
okay.
in what's happening with marine mammals, whether that's from inadvertent things like toxic runoff. We're not directly mm-hmm. dumping toxins, at least not the individuals,
mm-hmm.
but running off from our cars mm-hmm. and what we use in our yards, to people who really have well-meaning intentions and go up to that baby seal and pick it up and carry it out of a park, or sit and watch it being too close
being too
and
close.
Mom won't come back. So it's not all malicious.
So it does run that gamut of, you could have entanglement, entrapment, pollution, disease, I'm sure gets transmitted too.
Yes.
And you mentioned this sort of well-intended person who is either misinformed or takes an unfortunate action that negatively impacts the critter. Now, give me a little moment on that, because I think that's one of the really important messages that people have.
Yeah, absolutely, is to, if you are concerned, call before taking action yourself. One, because these animals are protected federally, so it mm-hmm. is illegal. But more importantly, we don't want you to get hurt. We don't want the animal to give you something that they may have, or mm-hmm. you to give something to the animal
yeah.
that you may have. So we.
Or that you mentioned in the case of the baby seal that's just left on the beach while mom goes and fishes
yes.
and she's coming back.
Correct. However, we're cautious with that story, because if you have a baby seal that's on the beach that's already thin or emaciated
okay.
or injured, it's highly unlikely that
mom
is
going to come back.
So a very healthy seal, okay, maybe she'll come back, but you still want to call so that the stranding network can monitor that and see if she's coming
yeah.
back.
And I think we're really lucky in Washington State, particularly the Puget Sound area, to have so many stranding networks and partners. Because I was comparing it to the Oregon coast and going, there's hardly any down there. I mean, there are people who don't do the scope of work you do, but are part of stranding networks.
There is no marine mammal rehab in Oregon. It is against the state law. So that's why they do not exist there. California has eight facilities. So that is a very strong presence down there. And all of those facilities do respond and cover very large
mm-hmm.
areas. I think here, as you mentioned, we are very lucky to have folks in all the areas. All of those networks may not be under, a lot of them may be all volunteer and have different resources,
right.
different capacities,
right.
but working together, we can make sure that
mm-hmm.
that happens. Like you said, we're very lucky to have so many. I think it can become confusing to the public.
That's kind of where I was going. Like, who do I call?
Yeah. Yes. So I just tell people, call any of them.
Oh,
if
yeah.
you don't know where you are, but you remember the number to Port Townsend Marine Sciencer, call them. They can help direct your call. Same thing. If you remember SR3, call us. We will help get you to,
mm-hmm.
or get the information to who needs it.
Or I bet you could call the Seattle Aquarium or anybody and say, who do I call?
Yes.
Yeah.
All of those folks in the network should be able to help.
So I now know that SR3 is the only facility like this in the Pacific Northwest.
The only one that focuses solely on marine
yeah.
mammals. So we don't have the permits for birds or river
mm-hmm.
otters or bunnies and squirrels
right.
and things
yeah.
like that.
And there are really important organizations who
Absolutely.
Do some of that work.
Yes.
So tell me, I know you guys are about to celebrate officially 5 years, is that right?
5 years of the hospital being open.
Of the hospital, okay.
Yes.
One of your staff shared with me that you were part of the origin story of this.
I am the origin
story. You are the origin story. Well, share.
I started this organization because I moved up here. I'm originally from the East Coast, and I moved up here just to do some contract work, and I wanted to be in the Pacific Northwest because
mm-hmm.
it's so beautiful. I lived in Alaska before, and I just thought, I'll just go experience that for a while. And I was shocked at the lack of resources to help marine mammals when they were sick or injured. There was a lot of let nature take its course, a lot of we're just going to have to leave it because we don't have the resources, which, you know, like I said, shocked me. There's 32 of these facilities throughout the country. And when you think of the Pacific Northwest, what do you think of? You think of environmentally friendly, environmentally forward.
Right.
So, you know, it was just really shocking to me that that resource wasn't already there and in place. And there are some terrestrial facilities that would be able to take seals, maybe in very limited numbers
mm-hmm.
or other things of that nature, but nobody that was focused just on these species. And as I mentioned, they're large. They take up a lot of
yeah.
space. There's a lot of regulation with them. It's very hard to do all the deer and bunnies and squirrels
mm-hmm.
and then add on
mm-hmm.
these other species as well. So, and it does take a little bit of different knowledge. People are specially trained to work with marine mammals mm-hmm. because they are so different in their anatomy and how they respond to medications and their needs for medical treatment.
Well, and they're not like dogs and cats where exactly. there are lots of people know how to treat them.
Correct.
I mean, it's impressive to me that your vision, seeing a need and doing it.
Well,
yeah. I know it probably has taken you a fair number of years, but
I started in 2011. After moving up here in 2010, we started, myself and a colleague, and tried to figure out why didn't this exist mm-hmm. and how could we get it to exist. And we really started the business side of it and became a nonprofit to start getting out there and educating people about why is this important?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it needed? What does it do for the environment and for the region? So it was a very long road to get here with lots of people doing all kinds of different supporting mm-hmm. roles and really making this go.
And it's inspiring to me for a couple of reasons. One, the difference one person could make, or one sure. person and a couple of friends. And then the amazing power of how that can grow and work with partners and collaborators and it become something just amazing. I haven't been down to this facility before. And things that impressed me about it, one was it's so small.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's got just a couple of good-sized tanks. And, you know, it's wintertime. You've got some, you know, animals in, but it's not your high season, I'm sure.
No.
You know? And yet you've got really a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one of your volunteer vets, or maybe on staff vets. I don't know. Anyway.
We've got about 225 volunteers around yeah. there. So this organization goes because yeah. of the community commitment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is the only place in the Pacific Northwest where volunteers, interns can really get hands-on with mm-hmm. marine mammals to be
yeah,
able to
you
gain
have a,
those skills.
Impressive knowledge among your staff. I was noticing yeah. that as we were walking around. And one of the things we were able to see was young harbor seal being x-rayed.
Yeah, that was great. You guys
like,
got to see that today.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the notion that you can do that without really disaccommodating the animal.
Sometimes.
But I mean, you've got that really yes. slick, portable mm-hmm. x-ray
yes.
machine, and you can adapt to it kind of where
Absolutely.
It is. And that there is a hospital here. And then the sort of the whole process of how you get an animal mm-hmm. back ready to enter the world.
Yeah.
So talk to me a bit about that process.
Yeah, I want to backtrack just for a second
oh, okay.
before I lose this thought. You mentioned, we got to see x-rays taken. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the biggest things about having this resource in the region is that you cannot look at an animal on the beach and know what it has.
Right.
A perfect example is this large adult that came in gunshot. When she was observed in the marina, she looked like she had probably some nasal discharge that maybe was from an infection, and she was very thin. We had no way of knowing. There's several different diseases and
mm-hmm.
traumas that could lead to that. So being able to bring an animal into a facility to do diagnostics is absolutely critical to understanding what is happening out in the wild.
Thank you for adding that in. In a way, because that's been one of the things that's really impressed me here, is how you can get clues
yes.
that an animal's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But you really need the science and the kinds of things that specialist healthcare person and people who know how to deal with the animals can provide.
And we won't win them all. There will be animals that will come in, we will do diagnostics, and we will say the most humane thing we can do is to humanely
yeah.
euthanize them. And that's part of how
yeah.
this goes. So,
yeah,
and they still provide incredibly important scientific
mm-hmm.
information through that process. And then also we get to make sure that they aren't suffering.
Right. We've not yet talked about your research arm, but you...
Mm-hmm.
You really are weaving a lot of aspects together, you know, sort of rescue responses, the rehabilitation, the research. I get why you call yourselves SR3 now. Yeah.
We want to make sure people understand this isn't, as some people might affectionately call, seal huggers. You know, yes, we love marine mammals
That's
of all kinds.
That's probably one of the reasons you're doing this.
But,
yeah.
Yes, but it is all backed and based in science.
Mm-hmm.
Short of talking about a very endangered population, the numbers of animals you bring in isn't really to make sure you're putting that many back into the
right.
population. It's to understand what are these animals affected
mm-hmm.
by, to share that science
yeah.
and that data.
That we all learn.
Yes.
And the learning to me is everything from an individual walking on the beach who
stumbles
upon a seal and goes, mm-hmm. what's that? So to get the public information out mm-hmm. there, all the way through, let's learn more about these animals. They're incredible. How do we help them? What do they need to get back in the water to be healthy members of their communities again? Mm-hmm. It's that whole process of learning at many different levels. It's really...
Well, and yeah. even our scientific community. I'm not sure if they talked with you today about the what's called mega esophagus. And that is
just introduced that topic.
Yeah. And that's a medical condition that seals had to be euthanized for in rehabilitation facilities before our colleagues in Canada figured out a way to potentially treat this. So they shared that at a scientific conference, and we went, hey, we have cases like that. Let's see if we can treat our cases too. And now we've got a scientific study that's spanning from BC all the way down the coast and over into Connecticut.
And there must be shorthanded it was when the esophagus is enlarged and traps food.
Correct. The food can't make it past into the stomach, and so obviously the animal can't eat.
And it seems to be, is it common, or is it just something you come across?
Well, it's hard to say. We are documenting more of it, mm-hmm. but is that because now we're here and, mm-hmm. and we're noticing this? I do think it's a condition that may be very difficult to diagnose in, say, a deceased animal. So a lot of our straining network partners that might have been doing necropsies for decades, this might not be something you can see that way. Mm-hmm. So again, that's why having a hospital is so important. That's something we can see. We still don't know whether that's genetic or mm-hmm. what it's being influenced from.
Yeah, and picking up an earlier thread, you can see it. We showed a series of x-rays where you could see...
how it heals, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How, you know, what a normal one looks like, what it looked like when it was all stuffed and bloated, mm-hmm. and then healing. It's like, that's a great story.
And then we satellite track those animals, so we can determine, or at least try to determine, mm-hmm. what's their success out in the wild. Is this a treatment we want to keep doing? Are mm-hmm. they being successful out there? Because, again, that's all the science behind it.
I was wondering, you know, you are a small facility offering really amazing stuff. Do you have a sense of how big the need is and how much you can respond to it?
Sure. I think it's a really good point to say we are a very small facility because we wanted to start small and grow with the need in the region. And also we're
sure,
a brand new nonprofit.
That makes sense. And you've got to learn. You know?
Well, I mean, I've done it everywhere, so I think I knew what I was doing, but yeah, I didn't have huge pockets to start off doing something.
Yeah.
We needed to show people in the community what this is and why it's needed. Started very small. We do have a long-term vision. We want to make sure that this is a teaching hospital where students can come in and learn, where the community can come in and learn, and we need a bit more space to do those mm-hmm. sorts of things. And also, I think as our environment, for better lack of way to phrase this, continues to degrade, we're going to see more and more mm-hmm. animals in need. So we want to be prepared for that, but we wanted to grow with the need. Mm-hmm. Right now, I would say that the need is definitely greater than what our facility could respond to. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. It's just, we know that there's times where you might have a very large animal, but I've got a bunch of small ones mm-hmm. and I can't always mix those two.
Yeah.
So really we need a little more space so we can accommodate those different sizes. And these animals also need to be quarantined when they first come in.
Sure.
They can't be mixing with other animals. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that kind of a need to be able to do a bit more.
The notion of kind of growing with the need and sort of positioning yourself with the information to mm-hmm. grow with that is that's really exciting and interesting.
And I will tell you, there are very few marine mammal veterinarians out in the world in general, and very few places where they can get training. Mm-hmm. And so that's something in the future we would want to be able to provide that kind of training to veterinary students and mm-hmm. vet techs and people who really want to go into this field. Because much like the maritime industry, we're going to have a problem in a few years without having enough workers.
Right. Gosh, I was thinking if I were young again, that would look like a really fascinating career.
It is definitely very fascinating. It is also very dirty. And
I'm sure.
A lot of dedication and hard work and blood, sweat, and tears.
And that was clear just walking around your facility and talking with some of your staff and hearing some of the stories of favorite patients.
Yes. They do not do this for the money. I can promise
you. Yeah. Do you have a favorite patient story?
Oh, goodness. That's so hard. there were a few patients that we dealt with before we had a facility. We had the ambulance that you may have seen out there. We called that our mobile MASH unit. And I would drive them all the way down to California, which in an ambulance takes around 15 to 17 hours, you know. And we would have to stop along the way to treat these animals en route and keep going as quickly as we could. So I think some of those are very powerful reminders of why I wanted to see this happen here in our own backyard. I wouldn't say I have a favorite patient, but I definitely have favorite species.
Okay, well, tell me.
And I do think fur seals are one of my most favorite species. They remind me a lot of very sneaky feral cats.
Ah.
They have this, how do I want to describe them? They'll just be sitting there looking like, I'm not going to do anything. No problem. You just do what you need to do and I'll be just fine. And then the next minute they're after you.
You know, and I think most of us probably aren't familiar with fur seals.
That's true. Yes. So they are more shaped like your sea lion body, very a lot smaller.
Sort of torpedo-ish.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like your harbor seal, you know, they have the very short front flippers.
Right.
These guys have the long front flippers so they can raise
so
up.
So they can move around.
Yes. Yes. They can move rather quickly.
Yeah.
And the ones that we see here in the region are usually somewhere around yearling to maybe adult size. So they're around maybe 20 pounds all the way up to 130 pounds.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So not as large as some of our California or Stellar sea lions or even our elephant seals that we see around here.
Do you see them here often? Or is,
and they should not be inside the sound.
So okay, that was another question.
Yes.
Are they open ocean or coastal?
They are open
guys?
Ocean. So if these animals are on our beaches, there is a problem.
It's a problem.
They do not come onto our beaches to rest. They should be out in the open ocean. They are breeding very far down south. They're not breeding up here. So anytime we see them around, it's not a good thing. Unless you're on a boat and you're far out, you might come across them.
So they're more open ocean predators, I assume. Carnivores.
Guadalupe fur seals. So, of course, they're breeding down in California and
Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And then we have northern fur seals, which are coming from the Alaska area.
Interesting. And I think one of your staff was telling a story about a fur seals being very particular eaters.
Yes, they are. Although they are not as particular as sea otters.
Oh.
Sea otters can be your pickiest. But fur seals can be, yeah, quite particular about what they would like and when.
Oh, and when.
Yes.
I want that fish alive on my schedule.
Yes. Yes, they can be like that.
So do you get, have you had sea otters in here?
We have not had sea otters in here. We have had fur seals. Sea otters definitely require a lot more. We would like to do some custom building for sea otters in the future because that's something we mostly here in the Pacific Northwest are adult sea otters or subadults. They're quite large and difficult.
And a very limited population.
We have around, I think the last count I saw was a little over 2,000. It is growing.
Okay, I had heard something like 1,200, but that's been several years ago.
Yes, so I think it is growing, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
All mostly along the outer coast.
Right.
That's not something we're seeing inside the sound. Here, if sea otters are pups and rescued, those animals are immediately deemed non-releasable per federal regulations.
Oh, okay.
Because we don't have... You have to have surrogates to raise them and release them, and that's not something we have in Washington.
Oh, surrogates like?
Other sea otters.
Other mothers, yes. Mothers and aunties,
yes.
Yeah.
And the only program for that, well, there's another one starting, but Monterey Bay Aquarium has a program that does that. And that's just
which is not surprising. Yeah.
Yes.
Finally, are there myths or misconceptions that people may have about marine mammal stranding or marine mammals that you would just kind of like to put a shout out and say?
Yeah, I think
something.
There's two that immediately come to mind. One is the concept of let nature take its course. I think when you see a marine mammal stranded or on the beach, there's a chance that they could be resting because they do use our shores for that. However, if there's any notice of, you know, a very skinny animal or like we talked about the nasal discharge or something out of the ordinary, I think people should just call. If you're worried at all, or maybe that animal's in a very busy area on a boat ramp, but looks healthy, I still think there's so many things that you can't tell by just looking at them that you should just call, just to be on the safe side. When we have plastics in the very deepest trenches of our oceans, I don't think in this area there are very many areas where some kind of human impact isn't happening to mm-hmm. these animals. So that comes to mind. I think the other misconception we hear a lot around here is that seals and sea lions are eating all of our salmon. And that's just not true. They are not the problem for our salmon recovery, and killing off a lot of them won't be the solution.
Very well said, and thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, one last thing. If anyone is curious about SR3,
sure.
How do they find out more about you?
Well, there's always our website, of course, and that's just sr3.org. Actually, within that website, there is a way you can kind of walk yourself almost through our facility. So you can kind of get to see that. And of course, lots of information there about us. Our social media is a great way to keep in touch and know what's going on in the facility. And we have all the channels.
No matter
what you're on, I think you can find us from Facebook to Instagram to TikTok to all of them. And then, of course, we do a lot of events and go and give presentations and talks throughout the region. So our event calendar is on our website as well, so you can see where we're going
to
be.
That's great. Well, and I hope you get a chance to come up to Port Townsend.
We do, frequently.
So good.
Keep an eye out for us.
Because I know the Marine Science Center is very much connected with you folks.
Absolutely. Yes.
And we've part of the stranding networks.
Yes, and I would encourage you to get signed up on the Marine Science Center's email newsletters, because when we do a release out there, they will let their supporters know so that you can come and watch one of these guys go home.
Oh, that would be fun and fascinating. And yes,
it's the best part of what we do is getting to send them home.
Well, on that note, Casey, that's a wonderful way to
isn't it?
To end. Yes, thank you so much.
Yes.
And it's been the most fascinating day. So it's been great.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, let's hear those mystery sounds again. And remember that the question is, who made each of the two very different sounds? Well, if you haven't already guessed, the clues are sea lions bark and roar. They're really noisy and they're really loud. Seals murmur and grunt softly, and they are quiet and subdued. Well, thanks for listening to this week's program on KPTZ at 91.9. And we hope you've enjoyed our program about information around the natural community where we live. If you miss a broadcast version of Nature Now, in addition to finding a podcast on the KPTZ website, you can listen to Nature Now on the podcast app of your smartphone or other device. Just search for Nature Now. And if you enjoy the podcast, please follow us and tell a friend about it. We also have an Instagram site where you can see photographs relevant to our programs. Thanks to today's sound engineer and editor, Nora Petrich, and thanks for listening. This week's music was created by Rick Bauer, especially for Nature Now.